It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. 312-981-7200. It's time to reload this week's news. The biggest stories, the winners, the losers, the overreported, the underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered from this week? In studio tonight, Amara Enya and Mario Smith. Amara, an educator, an activist, a former candidate for mayor. Are you going to announce something soon?
Lord.
Are you going to do it again?
Let's get past March 20th. Can we do that?
Today would be a good day to
Today would be a good day, right. Right opposite the NCAA tournament.
Right.
St. Patrick's Day reveling. I mean,
yeah,
right now would be the time to do it. And Mario Smith, of course, the poet and commentator here in Chicago, and also radio host on Lumpen. When do we hear you?
Every Thursday, 2 p.m.
Every Thursday, 2
p.m. And Tuesdays at 10:30, they do a rebroadcast of my show now.
All
Look
right.
at me.
Cool. Finally giving you the respect you deserve.
Yeah, somebody.
Rebroadcast.
In this town. Took them long enough.
All right, let's get right to the biggest stories of the week. We kind of all agree this has been a big week for news, but the Wednesday walkout, the kids across the country rocking out for violence and safety issues, and the debate that has come from that, including today, the story continues with some area high schools saying that the detentions and suspensions will be handed out from kids walking out. Why was this the biggest story of the week, Amara?
Well, I think just the sheer scale of the walkout. This was something that happened across the country. High schoolers, so it was young people who designated Wednesday as walkout day. And it was a unified action across the country. So I think that was what made it newsworthy.
What do you think, Mario?
Same. I think the power of these young people who don't really know each other, but to be able from all around the United States to say, this is the day we're doing it, this is what time we're doing it, this is how long we're going to do it. It was beautiful. I loved it. Yeah, I loved it.
It was great. I mean, obviously in the Chicago area, thousands of kids in the Chicago area as well as the suburbs, I mean, walked out downstate. And today we saw really the crux of it, where stories came out, I think it was from Downers Grove and some other areas, that said, we're going to follow up with our threats, the administrator's threats of detentions and suspensions. You don't get off scot-free for walking out of class. All right, so that's the conflict of the story. That's what makes it the biggest week. I mean, what do you think of that? What do you think of the idea of these schools? Because some administrators and some schools have said, hey, this was a learning experience, a teaching experience, if you will. Let's forego the punishment. But some schools are standing pat.
You go ahead.
Well, I mean,
future mayor.
I guess if they had outlined that there were consequences to the walkout, then fine. That's the meaning of civil disobedience, is that you are disobedient to whatever established rules or structures are in place. So I can't necessarily fault the schools, but I also think that they have to be aware of what message they're sending when kids have taken it upon themselves to use their voice, and how are they supporting that? Because this is a teaching moment for the kids as well.
It's also kind of ridiculous to... These young people are basically in school with, in the back of their mind, somebody might try to come and shoot us.
Yeah.
One of my classmates might not be stable enough to handle this and might go off on everybody. The idea that they have to walk out to protest terrible gun laws in this country is one thing. But then as an administrator, you go, well, this is too much. Mm-hmm. You can't walk out of school because you're afraid of being in school. I just think it's egregious that they would suspend or detain.
But again,
if it was me and I got suspended or detained, I would probably wear that like a badge all day.
Well, I agree in the sense that, and maybe not with the terrible gun law part, because I'm not sure that the laws are terrible. But I will say that if you are having school shooting after school shooting after school shooting, and all you're getting is thoughts and prayers and thoughts and prayers, and there are no changes with any of the laws, whether at the local, state, or national level, hoping that it just kind of goes away, I can understand why kids who are the victims in this case would want to stand up and be heard, regardless if they're familiar with how the laws are going to change. Yeah. And you see arguments from the right saying, you're being what the puppets for the liberals,
right.
and you don't even know what you're protesting. But they do, because at the center of protest, the whole concept is, this is not right.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The puppy goes into the overhead bin, and there's a bill on the Senate floor 24 hours after that happened. People begin getting capped off in Vegas and Florida, all over the, and it's like, so that,
yeah, you're
that
right. That's a very good
point. Just very ridiculous that an administrator of a school would not see this as an opportunity to use it as a form of educating everybody. These young people, man, I'm telling you.
Young people know.
They know.
They know. Just because they don't, they might not. And in many instances, they can articulate the laws surrounding particular legislation or issues. But just because they're not in the suits going down to either Springfield or the Capitol does not mean that they don't know the impact of these things on their lives. And more importantly, it's the fact that they're unwilling to play along with the status quo where they see nothing has been done. They don't have to, it's not rocket science to know that the people who've been representing their interests have not been effective. And so they're taking another route. And I think that idea is scary to those who would rather the gridlock and the inaction continue.
And I was just going to say, you know, these 16 and 17 year old kids aren't going to be 16 and 17 forever. They're going to vote. They are activated now. If they didn't have any interest in it before, I think the events of the last few years have gotten them to go, okay, so this is a process I have to be
in. But the question I have to that, and we can talk about that all night, is yes, they are ready to vote. Who are they going to vote for?
Who do they vote for?
Because there's either part. It's not like there's one party that is welcoming them in.
Right.
We've seen them maybe flock to the Democrat side and be let down over the years. So there's still a question about who are the candidates.
Maybe one of those kids, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be one of those guys. I just think that people underestimate the youth, and they always have. And they always will. And you underestimate these young people around this country, man. They are ready to go.
It was impressive. Amara Enya and Mario Smith in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's start with the winners and losers. We'll go winners, then losers. It's just in that category. In that order.
In that order.
In that order.
That's what they say on the South Side. In that order.
In that order.
And the West Side, too.
On the Download 720. Stay with us. I just saw Black Panther this weekend. This first, I finally got to see you guys.
Really?
Wakanda forever.
Yeah.
It's good. I liked it. It was good. Hype did not destroy it. I thought that was going to happen. I really did. I was like,
after 3 weeks and $1 billion.
There will be no challenge today.
Actually, today is the 1 month. Today marks 1 month that it's been out.
Really?
It still has
a chance. I think this week it's got some. I forgot what movie's coming out this
weekend.
Doesn't
matter.
Right now it has been number one since.
Black Panther ain't leaving the theater till Christmas, buddy. You can hang it up. Every week I'm going. Once a week.
Well, it's going to make the I have this on my winter category too. The Marvel universe, the Infinity War movie, which is coming out. The trailer came out today.
Yeah,
it's going to make it triple because they learned somewhere. I'm assuming in the last month that the star is going to be Black Panther.
Yep.
Yes.
Even if Black Panther's only in it for like a cameo,
6 seconds,
you're in the promo.
It's going to be like it's going to be like when Batman was on in China. It was called the Kato Show.
Oh.
I'm sorry. The Green Hornet, when it was on in China, was called the Kato Show because of Bruce Lee. Black Panther forever. They knocked it out the park.
Mario Smith and Amara Enya in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news, winners and losers. Why don't we start with the Democrats in Pennsylvania get the win. This was a 20-point swing. Whether or not, even if it was too close to call and they did a recall and the Republicans squeaked it out, the Democrats weren't supposed, I mean, just 2 years ago, weren't even close. So is this the? I mean, everyone loves the think pieces about this is going to tell what's going to happen, or the preview of what's going to happen in November. Is it?
I really don't know. I actually think that the Democratic Party would be foolhardy to use this as a bellwether for what's to come, especially in the midterms. The fact that it was close, I just don't see this as voting as being the panacea that I think they would like for it to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of inner turmoil within the party to determine what their message is, what their approach is, their leadership. So this is it's good, but I don't think it's wise for them to use this as a sort of, this is the future, this is the momentum that we'll be able to ride through the midterms.
Yeah, and I would say this too. You see in the state of Illinois, even with the primary, Democrat ads and mailers against Democrats in the way that the Madigan establishment is really going after progressives.
Yep.
And that is, I mean, here we go again with this Clinton-Bernie Sanders divide in this party. So, yeah, there may be a win in Pennsylvania, but I'm not sure what it means for the Democrats in November.
I think the only way we'll be able to judge that is wait until November. You really don't know. It's hard to say. I think I do think they're sweating, though, the Republicans, a little bit. I think Paul Ryan's definitely sweating.
Yeah.
I think that will be the test. If he's gone, it's over with for them.
Is he having a close race, or is that just wishful thinking for Democrats that they could go after the House Speaker's district in Wisconsin?
He's not really supported by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not really supported by him. And I guess you would, as weird as this sounds coming out of my mouth, you would need his support in Wisconsin to kind of sell it. You know what I mean? And I don't know
if they rally around, if they also rally around that particular race, I think they could have a major impact in getting rid of Speaker Ryan.
But we also have to keep in mind that every time, whatever party the president is part of in a midterm election, the opposite party always ends up garnering a lot of votes and support. So there probably will be a Democratic shift. But some of those Democrats are now being called Trump Democrats because they are like conservative Democrats. Yeah, whatever, man. You know what? I really.
If you believe the ads.
If you, all of it is it's ridiculous. Rather redundant.
Like the ads that are on, I have in the loser category just about the political ads this season have been just
horrible.
Brutal.
Horrible.
But this idea of a Trump Democrat, you see this where it almost seems to be coming from the Democratic Party in the state of Illinois. Anyone who challenges it, they find ways to say, I think it's Scott Drury's ad, who is. Fourth or fifth in the enemy of Madigan in the AG race, but he's taking the same money from Trump, and they just show Trump, and I'm like, how is Scott Drury and Donald Trump in the same? It's the same with Jeannie Ives and Chris Rauner,
and even the Lipinski Newman race.
Yeah. Oh man,
and he's got Obama. It's just crazy. Right. It's crazy,
and he got the same guy too to do the voice. Listen,
oh no,
don't vote for him.
He's making good money though.
Oh, he's getting paid.
He's the winner out of all of this.
We're gonna find out that it's just a voice modulator for Mike Madigan.
All right.
It'll be Mike Madigan going, in a world.
More than likely.
Before we move on to losers, the winners, the Loyola Ramblers, the Loyola Chicago, a great story. One that, I mean, even as the tournament started, we're like, oh, that's feel good. That's good. Mm-hmm. But they not only had the upset win, but at the buzzer, the SportsCenter top story for the Loyola Ramblers in Rogers Park.
Ramblers are good, man. They have a good basketball team. Everybody on their team has won a championship of some sort in high school. They're good. They're not.
I hadn't been following them. I had not been following until the tournament, and I was actually shocked. But yeah, they're now on the radar.
Shout out to Dante Ingram.
Well, Dante Ingram, a kid from Simeon High School, and that's what I really like about this tournament. I think the Chicagoans are gravitating not just for Chicago school to be there, but for the kid who hit the big shot to be a public league school kid. And you know, there's so much about Chicago trying to retain its talent.
Yes.
And to have this kid shoot and make it, it's a warm feeling for all Chicagoans.
Yeah, this is they're going to beat Tennessee.
You think so?
I know so.
I did hear Kenny Smith on the broadcast say, they're men.
Yep. They are grown men. They're grown men. They're grown men. It's going to be tough, but I believe
I was like, oh,
they get two games out of this tournament.
All right.
We'll find out tomorrow,
right?
Oh, I can't wait.
All right, coming up, let's just make a transition right to losers. I have on the list J.B. Pritzker, the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah.
Right before, I mean, there can be something said about the Tribune has been a thorn in J.B. Pritzker's side in the way that they come up with the worst timed investigative stories about J.B. Pritzker.
I'm just smiling.
Love
but
it.
About his offshore dealings, which is not that surprising, but what it shows, again, is an out-of-touch, they're trying to portray an out-of-touch millionaire, billionaire, who is hiding money and moving in the Cayman Islands type of offshore mess that we're familiar with the people that are in power now.
Yes. I mean, Pritzker has been trying to... So, first of all, it's interesting that he's disappeared from the press now. So, he's nowhere to be found after the debate. He has tried to pass... He's almost tried to hide the fact that he is a billionaire, that he has done things that many billionaires do, and has this, to me, a disingenuous veneer of being for everyone and being able to understand everyone. When you do have these tax shelters, like, you do that. Own it. You have spent $63 million in this gubernatorial primary.
Of your own money.
You have to own that. And people have a right to ask those questions. And I think the Tribune has done an excellent job of looking both into his dealings, but also into the property tax issues and really calling attention to those issues. And he has done a poor job of responding to any of it.
Well, in the debate at TTW, he's up there not really going in on Joe Barrios, where everybody else wants to go in on that property tax. And once again, finding himself in a situation that he just doesn't seem to be on the right side of where momentum's at. That being said, Mario.
Yes,
anyone can beat him? I mean, or is it his to lose at this point?
We had
a
panel discussion on my show yesterday about this, about him in particular. You know, I don't know if anybody is going to beat him, in spite of the fact that he, first of all, the world better be glad Mario's not a billionaire, because I tell you all my business, where my money was and what I was doing with it. Wouldn't even care.
You wouldn't even care
at all. In a robe with an ascot on, I'd do it every day.
I'd like to see that look.
Oh, I'm working on it. I think he's going to win. I don't think it's going to be as big a victory as maybe he thinks he's going to have. I think the real question is, though, out of any of these candidates, can any of them beat Bruce Rauner? And I wouldn't have said that a year ago, but you think about all the stuff that Bruce Rauner in the last 3 years has been a part of or has done or not done. And then you've got Biss or Kennedy or... I almost called him Blagojevich or J.B. Pritzker. And I mean, Pritzker probably will win.
But some of the things that have come out, so the FBI tapes that came out.
No, Jesus.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. We'll be naive to think
that they put
everything out there in the primary. And so the question really is, can Pritzker beat Rauner? And I don't think so.
I don't think
so. Okay,
well,
here's what we'll do. Let's take a break. We'll get a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back and stay on that topic as the elections are coming up here on Tuesday. We'll go through some of the other races. Of course, we mentioned the attorney general, but we also mentioned Joe Berrios and the assessor's race. A lot to talk about when it comes to the races. So we'll stay on that coming up after the news here. It's a download or reload in this week's news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Yeah. It's a download, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Mario Smith and Amara Enya in studio. We're reloading this week's news. 630 says a lot of kids. We're just using the walkout as a way to ditch school. Didn't actually care about the gun laws, like the mob of kids that vandalized a Walmart across the street from their school. I know that story because I have a feeling that that's showing up possibly in certain media circles.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten three texts tonight about what about the vandalizing the store.
Yeah.
Again, hundreds of thousands of kids walked out.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about one situation. I will go on record. And I'll say, don't vandalize the Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it.
Terrible.
I mean, thousands, tens of thousands of kids across the country walk out, and that's the one thing that they want to highlight.
But of course, they're going to highlight that.
Things.
Oh, always. Yeah. Of course, yeah.
They walk straight to Walmart. You know, I saw this as well.
Has anybody ever actually been in a Walmart?
Yeah.
Seen what goes on in that place? You might have been doing them a favor.
I also say on the other side, too, that I saw a video that was taken of a kid at, I think it was a Kenwood, who was arrested.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And that went through like wildfire through Twitter, viral, and everyone saw it. And you don't really know why, but then it was all about the police and they're not letting African-American kids protest in the same way. But I don't know. I don't know what happened, why that kid was arrested. I mean, there's so much about we only are you know, seeing what we want to see,
right,
if that's the way it is.
And you know, there's always there's balance, right? So you've got the kids walking out, but if you're a report of any kind of standing, you're going to be like, there's got to be more to it. Somebody's not walking out of someplace.
Right.
And then you find out about the Walmart thing and you run with that.
Right. If you were in support of the kids walking out, then you were in support of. If you weren't, then you were looking for any reason to discredit or delegitimize the walkout.
I still say, down with the kids. Wu-Tang is for the children.
Yes. Yes.
312-981-7200. We're continuing here with the losers. Let's go back to, election. We go back and forth. I was surprised this election season how much media there was about the misleading ads. And you saw this with Bruce Rauner's ad about Jeannie Ives, about Mike Madigan, which Madigan and Ives are somehow in bed together.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, and then you've seen it with the Joe Berrios ad about Fritz Kagi, about the NRA. But I've seen a lot of press, meaning people fact-checking or saying that that's not right or people stepping up and editorials. It seems that this is more than usual in the fact that there are egregious examples of just flat-out lying and hoping that the electorate is ignorant.
Well, the electorate doesn't do its research anyway. So it's just like where I work, we have to make these ticket bills, and we have a thing about a coat check. No one ever reads it. And I'm like, people don't study. You should really take this seriously. You should know everything intimately about these candidates because they are controlling the whole plane for 4 years. Just like not knowing enough about judges, a judge can change your life. Literally, in 10 seconds. And you're like, you don't know any position of any of these folks. So now it's not a surprise that they're using blatant lies because nobody's going to fact check them.
Do you think it'll change at all? Or, I mean, is this just data says that you can manipulate the electorate by doing this kind of stuff?
I hope that it changes. I mean, the amount of stretching in this election cycle has just gone beyond the pale. I mean, somehow the assessor is connected to the NRA and he's fighting gun violence. It's bizarre. And I think it's ridiculous and really speaks more to the fact that a lot of these candidates don't have anything defensible to say about themselves, so they have to concoct these bizarre
ramblings,
manipulations of facts to smear their opponent. So I hope that this is dialed back.
And to what end does that serve you if you're lying? And then you win. So now, if I'm me or you, we're like, that dude's a blatant liar.
Well, obviously, you say that, but the president of the United States right now seems to use that as a strategy. I'm not one way or the other. That has been proven fact that he does not necessarily tell the truth when and does not feel any remorse for.
Almost threw these headphones when you mentioned his name.
I just said the president of the United States. All right, so but moving on, let's talk about this because the assessor's office. That has become a crazy race for the Cook County assessor. The incumbent Joe Barrios, who has been in the loser category a couple weeks in a row here because he has just been really attacked by investigative reports, stories. I mean, really just about favoritism that he gives downtown buildings. Yep. And now a new study that says because of that favoritism, millions of dollars have been put on the back.
$2.2 billion
put on the backs of the rest of Chicago. Yes. So for me and my tax bill, when I think about how much it went up, a lot of that had to do is because the people who own whatever skyscraper went down.
Yes.
Not a good storyline 4 days before your reelection.
Yeah. But this is the information that the public needs to know. I mean, quite frankly, I wish this had come out earlier, but the fact that it's coming out now, I think, is as good a time as any to really shine a light on what's been happening for years, not just under this assessor, but under his predecessor as well. And if this is what it takes for them to actually change the formula, change the whole process, and if that means he loses his job, then so be it. But he's been allowed to ride this gravy train, he and the others who've been involved in this whole scheme for far too long. And as you said, it's cost us $2.2 billion that we're shouldering as opposed to the large real estate holders who should have been bearing more of that burden.
Yeah.
I agree with everything Amara just said. And I will add that I believe on Wednesday morning we'll be talking about him as former Cook County tax assessor. So. I'm almost sure.
Well,
almost.
It's going to be interesting because I think more than anything, it's a referendum on the Chicago machine.
It really is.
It really is.
And the assessor plays in that very well. So we'll see how that kind of plays out on Tuesday. Yep. All right. Let's get to the overreported and the underreported stories. I had on the overreported the revolving door of Trump cabinet. It's a huge story. It's definitely, but this idea that Rex Tillerson's out, which is no surprise. I've been talking about that for 8 months now.
Yeah.
But then right away, the media knows. I don't know if they get the readout of the people who are clicking websites, and they're like, ooh, people like this story. Let's start speculating about who's next and who's next. Sources say this guy's next and that guy's next. And at a certain point, I feel like it's overreported because, as we just saw with the Tillerson story, it was almost an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not getting impeached anytime soon, so this is his act. You're fired. That's his signature phrase.
Now, I'll play devil's advocate.
Hey!
You like when I do that,
yes,
right?
I do.
I also believe that the president has the prerogative to do so. If his whole thing, and I'm not necessarily endorsing it, but if his whole thing is, I want to drain the swamp, and I want people to do things my way, and I'm going to apply my way to the federal government. When he first comes into office, he picks a lot of guys who are pretty standard, and they might be a national security advisor with experience or a secretary of state, whatever it might be. And over time, he's realizing, you don't fit the bill. You are too much of the status quo. You are getting in the way of the radical changes that I want to do. You're fired. And I guess that's what if you're a Trump supporter, that's what you want. You want people to get out of the way so the president can do his job.
But is it more of him wanting people that always say yes and never saying no?
That's the question.
Of course it is. This isn't about This is about him wanting yes men to surround him. And yes, he does have the prerogative to determine who his staff will be. I mean, anyone in leadership should have some measure of control over who they have to work with. However, there's something to be said about the instability in the White House because of that revolving door. How can you move any kind of policy and how can you do anything consistently when next week you don't know if you're going to be in or out? Mm, right. And what message does that send to your existing staff who will now feel that at any moment they're going to get you're fired right. line? Right?
I got a lot going on. I don't have time for all this Stormy's all in my business. You're fired.
I have Stormy as well as the Mario. That you're overreported.
Yes. Yeah, Stormy Daniels, man. Who knew that the linchpin to take down the Trump administration would be pornographic movie actress?
You know what? It felt like that has been a story doing this Reload segment every Friday. That was at the biggest. Then it was winners and losers. Then it was rabbit hole, and now it's in the overreported because it just feels like now all the lawyers, everybody involved, the media, they want to continue to keep this in our right in front of us, even though there is no extra or new news.
And tonight, Trump's lawyer is saying that the NDA that she signed, that she didn't fulfill the agreement, so they're trying to get $20 million out of her. I say show the 60 Minutes interview this Sunday, and let's see what's up. Because what is Trump going to say? I did not ever. Yeah. Look at her. Yeah, you did. You were all up on her. You did. You did. You absolutely did.
Well, I think it was Eric Zorn who had a great column about that, just saying what the president should say. He just come out and say, I didn't think you can handle it, but I was wrong. You can.
She was a bit aggressive. I had to back up.
Yeah, and I did it. I didn't. I'm sorry that I didn't say I did it earlier.
He should have just said, again, own it. Yeah. You did it. You cheated on your wife on it.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. Okay, so we will do underreported coming up, and then we got underreported, we got rabbit hole, and then we've got which story we remembered. Coming up here on the download, we're reloading the news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Mario says hi, of course, as always.
Hey, buddy.
I'm a big fan.
I'm a bigger fan.
Rob Martier, dude. Step two.
Let the mutual love fest meeting continue.
Every time I'm here, bro. Every time I'm here.
Mario Smith and Amara Enya in studio. Underreported. Let's go right to Amara's underreported. This is a story I didn't know much about at all, about an activist who died in Brazil. Talk about this.
Yeah, so Mario Franco was just a dynamic activist woman from the favelas in Brazil. Spoke out on every issue that affected disenfranchised and marginalized people, particularly around police brutality and the killings that were happening of people from where she came from. She got elected to city council in Brazil, was 18 months into her term. She's 38 years old, 18 months into her term. She is gunned down by assassinated, essentially, in my opinion, shot 4 times in the head, 9 times overall. Her driver was also killed. And this has sparked protests across Brazil. She spoke up for women's rights, particularly around black women. This is a huge, huge loss, but more telling. It speaks to me about what happens for those who are willing to speak truth to power.
Yeah, right.
And that there's so much sacrifice involved when you choose to challenge particularly oppressive systems. And
I would also say it's underreported, meaning it's not a story that is hitting the front pages of our country.
She was actually talking about police brutality. I guess the new president in Brazil is trying to has given the police sweeping powers where they can really just do whatever the hell they want to do. And unfortunately, her voice got shut off because she was speaking up against something that she fully believed in and the people in the country believed in as well. And as black people in Brazil, they got it rough. It's really rough. It's almost as rough as it is for black people in America, I suppose. Yeah. But Ashe, that hurt this morning to read that. That was tough.
Some other stories this week. Of course, the head of the person who the president wants to nominate to be the head of the CIA fell under controversy for possible a history of waterboarding and war crimes. And there was a lot of pushback saying, people coming out. I think even lawmakers coming out. I'm not going to vote for this person. And it came out that the story that everybody was referring to, even later, was wrong. Like they said that she was in Thailand at the time and she had oversaw this the waterboarding of a terrorist suspect, and she wasn't. And they corrected the story, but nobody's corrected the the analysis or the reaction to that story, you know, like that. And so now I think it's an interesting way we live now where you can say something, whatever you want to say. And if you're wrong, well, you're wrong, but it still stays with that person.
That sort of goes along with the 24-hour news cycle. Like now it's not the fact checking and the verifying is not happening. It's just we put whatever we can out there and then we'll try to clean it up after the fact if it turns out that it's wrong. And this is one of those instances where they didn't do any of the cleanup.
She was at that casino that Black Panther and Adora Malaje were at.
Oh, wow.
She's doing
269 says, here's another. This is right to your example night. About the 24-hour news cycle. Underreported. Trump's going to get his ego parade.
Oh,
that's what he says. At the estimated cost of $30 million, and then they go into the stat about if the money was divided amongst the VAs. But that was a story that was right at the beginning of this week. And because of the 24-hour cycle, it just disappears.
Yep.
So I don't know if it was underreported because it was really reported on that day. But maybe when
that
you
was
get
like
to
Monday,
Friday,
right?
Yeah, you get to Friday. You're like, yes, I guess it is based on everything else.
It's kind of like when I watch CNN. I forget that CNN used to actually do 24-hour news reports, right?
Now it's
everybody has a show.
Yeah.
You say two words on CNN, you get a show the next week. So it's kind of like,
you want to know what else was this week? Which is crazy, didn't make our list. At the beginning of the week on Monday was the U.S. House Intelligence Committee saying that they're wrapping up the investigation of Russia. The Republicans and Democrats came out the next day. That was Monday.
But that's a perfect example of the 24-hour news
cycle. Isn't that crazy to think about?
That was Monday. It's just right.
All right, let's talk about our rabbit hole stories. Dennis Rodkin and the crew at Crane Chicago Business had a big story I read today about underwater mortgages. And something that you think about back at the recession 2009-2010, that Chicago leads the nation in houses being under or mortgages being underwater.
Yeah,
it has not responded like many other places around the country have. There's factors in why that is, this, there, and that. But something that I feel is also falls into the underreported category, but also rabbit hole story in the sense that if you listen to the federal government or even the state government, we're past all that. Regulations be damned.
Right.
Get rid of all these financial industry regulations. They're hurting the economy. Everyone's rich again. And you see a story like that where you see that a lot of Chicagoans are still struggling. On top of the fact that you see the investigation in the Tribune about the assessor's office, it really does paint this picture that, no, we're not past what happened just a mere 10 years ago.
Yes. I think it dovetails very well with what's happening with the property tax system here. And it is underreported because if you listen to them tell it, we've moved past the recession. Unemployment is at record lows. Folks are moving into the city, whatever the narrative is. But the reality is that many people are underwater. And then when you couple that with what I call the property tax scam, then you understand why so many people are underwater in their mortgages.
Yeah.
Jabs.
Your rabbit hole in the same area is segregation increasing in suburbs, according to a report.
Yes. So this was a study that came out, I believe, out of the University of Chicago, where it's showing that segregation is increasing in the suburbs, whereas previously it was understood that it would decrease. As people moved out of the city, they were moving to more diverse communities and they wanted to be in more diverse communities. But what they're finding is that suburbs are becoming increasingly segregated. People are choosing whether they can choose or whether they're just unable to move into certain areas. That segregation is increasing there.
I used to live in Harvey. There it is.
That's it. There you go.
The last white person to live in Harvey was Lou Boudreaux. 700 years ago. There you go. Shout out to Harvey, the magic city.
Yeah. You know, last person in Harvey. Mm-hmm. The last white person in Harvey. That's hilarious.
Thank you. I'm working on it.
Yours is ticket prices for... What is this? What is OTR?
On the run, Beyonce and Jay-Z. Let me explain something to you, Justin Kaufman.
Like, off track what?
Let me explain something to you and your listeners. Ain't no way in hell that I'm paying that kind of money.
So this is Jay-Z and Beyonce coming on tour. What are the
second tour
prices?
On SeatGeek to sit on the floor of Soldier Field, which I wouldn't do. It's $1,300 for one ticket.
Wow.
Let me tell you something. What will have to happen for $1,300? Jay-Z's coming to my crib. We're going to eat lunch together, and then he's going to drive me to the show.
He's gonna
make sure I get my
week.
Seat and do it at Soldier Field for 3 months. Yeah. Every Friday, I get to go see him and his wife.
That's crazy, man.
That's ridiculous.
Crazy.
And if you got that kind of money, first of all, I know people that are going, and I know you broke. If you got that kind of money, you a sucker. Ain't no way in the world. Spotify.
And they're going to do that tour 30 more times
exactly.
in their lifetime.
Well, you know. And then if he comes out with another great album, he's going to come right back.
Yeah.
And I guess it says more about where we are as a country when your entertainers can command that kind of dollar and you bite. You're like, I'm buying. I'm going to see it. Man, please. All I got YouTube. I got YouTube. On my TV. I got screen mirroring.
All right, real quick, to the last the last one of the night, which story will be remembered in history from this week? What do you got, Amar? What do you think the story is going to be?
So I think I said something about Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
His passing. And he was such a giant in the sciences and physics and metaphysics and everything. And so I think that was kind of underreported or got lost in the shuffle too.
But that's a good one too. That will be remembered. That's a good thing to remember.
Stephen Hawking was the dude.
Yeah. What do you think, Mario?
Stephen Hawking. I think that'll be it. Well, you know, because again, this 24-hour news cycle, it'll probably be Stormy Daniels.
Oh,
those is what people will remember for the next 5,000 years.
Stormy over Steven?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be.
And I'll say this is the week that people will look back and see that the Chicago Bears win the Super Bowl.
Slow down,
the
friend.
Five or six free agent acquisitions.
Let's not be so quick about that.
14-2.
Let's see a football in the air first.
Yeah. I don't know why. Why would that ever change? Why would we not?
Because,
be
you know, the Bears. I can wait. Go Sox. Congratulations, WGN, for having the White
Sox.
There you go. I love you now again.
There you
although
go.
Although I did not love you.
Yeah, right. Mario Smith, Amara Enyim, reloading this week's news. You guys, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.